You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Good morning. Welcome to this week's edition of the Yarra Bicycle Users Group radio show on 3CR Radical Radio, broadcasting from Narang, Melbourne, Australia. And thank you to Democracy Now for the last hour of current affairs. My name's Chris, and Yarra Bicycle Users Group radio, we're proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people, the Kulin Nation, from the lands from which we transmit people-powered radio. And Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio, we're a half-hour program broadcasting weekly on 3CR about bikes, cycling, mobility, urban mobility, micro-mobility, advocacy, adventures, and a whole bunch of things in between. Now, this week just gone, you would... Yes, it is the 1st of December, and I actually even popped on a pair of thermals this morning. Isn't that fun? But that's the joy of living in a temperate zone. Things are a bit weird at times. But yeah, it's cold, it's rainy, and welcome to summer, apparently. But I digress. There's a lot of stuff happening across Melbourne. We are a Melbourne-centric show, and we do topics a bit broader. But happy Munnal Day to all those who celebrate. And... it's kind of fascinating to, from a personal perspective, to just look back on, well, just 10 years of that, of a much longer thing to get that piece of infrastructure built. I can remember 10 years ago, as part of that state election, we pushed back against East-West Link, and it's been so much change in the inner suburbs because of that, and a lot of people who benefited from it may not actually be aware. That's such a big topic, and I don't even know where to dive in there. But I also got to say that thank you to those of us who braved the impending, the deluge that we got promised but didn't turn up till about 2 hours later. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Critical Mass on Friday night for the 30th. A well-attended, happy little ride with the usual, joy and camaraderie. And, you know, it's a thing of we're still out there. We're still having fun. We're still having mischief. Not at anyone else's expense, to be quite honest with you, because we are traffic and we move along at a fair clip. Now, I'm going to see if this works. If it doesn't work, well, I'll just move on to the next topic and just see if this thing works for me. Anyway, the Critical Mass ride itself was a nice elongated bog lap, which started up at the State Library as per usual, and went down to where Bourke Street meets Collins Street. You know, never in your wildest dreams when you're growing up in Melbourne would you think that would happen, but it did. When they, the very long thing of the Docklands redevelopment, and kind of going off the bicycle remit for a moment, I did a bit of a really deep dive on the Fisherman's Bend Blue Lake thing in the last few months and didn't come out of it feeling too happy of what we do to our local environment, let alone broader issues of what was there and what we've basically mangled that environment that existed. But keying back into, let's see if this works. Hope it works. Here we go.
Happy birthday, dear Critical Mass.
yeah, that was a happier ride than last month's, which was an incredibly humbling ride, which was the Will Richter Memorial Ride that ended at, well, we actually completed Will's ride that he was supposed to do back in September this year. And that, you can, yeah, we can look up willrichter.org and the rest of that. But for last Friday, yep, 30 years. And I can't even begin to try and correlate what has happened in the last 30 years. We actually do have a lot more frameworks. We do have better infrastructure. What we do have is that every time there is some type of a progress, there is the invariable blowback. And yes, we have discussed that a fair bit on the show. But what I'm getting to is, you know, for Munnell Day and all that sort of stuff for the Melbourne Metro finally opening after 10 years, is keep an eye on the announceables. Gipps Street is all but finished. I can't believe I've said that. If you look at the Yarrabug site, you can see we've got some history going back there to 2004, 2005 on that. It's by no means the most complete history. There are people out there who have even longer memories and know of protest actions and advocacy to get that piece of infrastructure finished. And it's not just for cyclists. It is an accessibility issue. It always has been an accessibility issue. And another announceable that could be coming up real soon is the Velo Way. For better or for worse, they built it. There's some people who really, really want it. Yes, I understand why they've built it, but, and the, again, a longer history behind that, but it comes down to there's a whole bunch of things to do around cycling and accessibility issues where there are standards. We do have, you know, frameworks like the Integrated Transport Strategy and a whole other things I could riff off on. But when it comes to state and council sort of oversight, they don't really follow their own guidelines at times. And this is why we get stop-start bicycle infrastructure and a whole bunch of things where you go, it's not standard. Well, it is, but you know, slightest bit of blowback or budgetary concerns, or I don't really understand what, this is, again, I've heard this from project managers and people in that sort of area of life. They really sometimes don't understand what they're putting in. And there's also the extra pressure of other things within that government department or who's doing the oversight for the infrastructure. It gets a bit weird as where I'm going to tidy this one up is, have you seen some of the lane marking and paint treatment on Shepherd's Bridge? It's pretty special. It's really interesting. I don't know how I can delve into that one without making some pretty derogatory remarks. I'll just leave it alone. Now, I just want to bring into a correction. I got pulled up on this on Friday night, and I knew last fortnight that I'd done it as soon as I said it on air. Author correction. C.S. Lewis is not the father of John Forrester. Unfortunately, his father also was called C.S. Forrester. So this is where in my brain last fortnight show that I got it mangled up. So, okay, it's the guy who wrote Horatio Hornblower series of books, not the bloke who written at the same time, actually. They were very roughly about the same time period in English literature. The bloke who wrote The Chronicles of Narnia. Would make for a very interesting genre, though. But again, it doesn't digress away from the point that John Forrester, who was the son of C.S. Forrester, caused a lot of damage to cycling advocacy. I don't know where I should start off on this again because I don't think I'll be able to stop. But anyway, do have a look at that Not Just Bikes video. It is a really long video, but it does unpack a lot of things that are still quite relevant today of stuff I was just talking about 2-3 minutes ago of people getting confused or not quite understanding or just not allowing themselves a bit of nuance to understand what mobility, accessibility and cycling infrastructure actually entails. It doesn't mean thinking like car infrastructure. It means, again, some more nuanced safety-based features in terms of speed differentials and barriers and a whole bunch of other things. Anyway, after the, I might pay a couple of community service announcements, I'm going to be talking to Lachlan McKenna, and we're going to be chatting about things like e-bikes, e-bike standards, petitions, and cycling advocacy.
they're eyeing off an estate which is in perfectly good condition. It just happens to have bay views and a lot of open space.
Bay Views for All is a new documentary that reveals the human cost of the Victorian government's public housing redevelopment project. The film documents residents of the Barrack Beacon public housing estate as they fight to save their homes and community. Bay Views for All is available for community members, public housing advocates, and organisations to screen, intending to spark conversations, raise funds, and educate audiences on the importance of public housing. To organise a screening, email barrackbeacon@gmail.com. That's BARACKBEACON @gmail.com.
Bury public housing! Stop the demolition!
A 3CR supporter.
The annual Melbourne Pacifica Festival is on again, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, December the 6th, at the playground end of Banjo Patterson Park in Lynbrook. Immerse yourself in the richness of Pacific Island culture with traditional dance, dynamic drumming, soulful harmonies, bands, guest artists, children's activities including rugby clinics, Pacifica arts and crafts, and yummy food. Lots of fun and activities for the whole family. Saturday, December the 6th in Lynbrook. Visit melbournepacificafestival.org. Melbourne Pacifica Festival is a 3CR supporter.
And you're back listening to Yarra Bicycle User Group Radio on 3CR Radical Radio. And on the line today, we've got Lachlan. We can have a bit of a general chat about all the origins of e-bikes, standards, petitions, and a bit of bicycle advocacy. So how did you kind of come into like being interested in this interesting thing of kind of e-bike standards and the like?
Well, I moved to Tasmania in 2023 and lived there for a year. And I read Saul Griffith, who's an Australian-American inventor, very much focused on electrification of homes and our local communities. He wrote a quarterly essay, and in that he had a small section on e-bikes and e-bike regulation, which really just kind of spoke to me. Was talking about how Australia has some of the most restrictive electric bike limits in the world, and how we really don't have the same classifications and categories that fit every single need, including commercial use, as other countries and other regions like Europe and the United States. He really talked about how coastal communities in New South Wales, where he lives, they're very hilly, and you know, a conventional e-bike, when you're going up a hilly street at, you know, 5 to 8 kilometres an hour, carrying a bunch of groceries and maybe a kid on the back, is actually quite unsafe. So really kind of spoke to how power is probably not the best measure for e-bikes, how it's probably torque, and we should probably look at something around increasing the speed to something closer to 30 kilometres per hour and aligning with United States Class 1 e-bike classification, which is kind of what our roads and streets are designed to, US design guidelines in a way. We've really incorporated those in our own local guidelines. So the kind of way that I wanted to capture it in the petition to Tasmanian decision makers and get the Tasmanian bike retailers behind it was that our streets and roads were originally designed for horses and horses and carts at 750 watts, which is 1 horsepower, and it kind of could capture the imagination of that's what our streets and roads were originally designed for. Let's increase it to that, and we're trying to get people to drive around our communities at 30 kilometres per hour, preferably. So matching that with e-bikes probably make a bit more sense for our conditions rather than the densely populated cities of Europe.
Yeah, so how would that kind of like key into the standard clarification? You've probably seen this in the last week and a half of the EN 15194 standard clarification. That's the European thing. That's got actually not much crossover, has it? Or can you correct me on that?
It's got a bit. Look, I understand the, and I haven't read the standard front to back, but I understand it's kind of going back to what our standard originally was before the federal coalition government scrapped it a few years back. So it's kind of reverting back to what we originally had. But it's really... what I was advocating for was a new classification, one that was possibly for targeted maybe towards cargo bikes, maybe towards more commercial uses. You know, you've got the, probably everyone's seen the Australia Post sort of micro cars almost that go around our communities and can go up to 40 kilometres per hour and use only... some roads and streets, they can't go on every single one. So, but those have licensing requirements. They have, you know, registration, insurance associated. But really, there's possibility for another category. That means when we are riding around our community with groceries and a heavy cargo load on the back, that we can maintain sort of a safe speed. And maintain a safe sort of acceleration, even in most conditions. So, you know, ideally, in a transportation system, we've got the right vehicle for the right conditions.
Yeah. So the issue being, going back to, you know, the previous coalition government, how can we kind of come to this without saying they messed it up? And this is the reason why we've got high-powered moto e-bike sort of, you know, e-moto. Not, this is the big confusion, because people are getting confused between, you know, the e-motos and cargo bikes is something that's very easy to do in the public mind. And this bringing back the reinstated standard is trying to get that overpowered thing out of it, but how can we delineate between what you're advocating for against, like, you know, the rabid kind of safety angle that comes into this, plus obviously the overpowered sort of stuff that other parts in Australia, areas in Australia have issues with.
Yeah, absolutely, and no one wants to see these electric e-motos going 80 kilometres per hour and. You know, some of the very tragic deaths and injuries we've seen on that. No one wants that. But there is probably a modest middle ground. And this is something that the Bicycle Network has talked about. Not necessarily the speed. They're very supportive of maintaining 25 kilometres per hour. But the power, or a better measure would be torque, because the power is more of a measure of the energy efficiency of the motor, rather than, you know, the acceleration or maintaining speed uphill. It's really an additional classification, and it could be based on the length of the vehicle. You know, specifically talking about cargo bikes, or it could be the weight, such that any additional increase in power or torque would be matched with the right vehicle and its right use. So an additional commercial category or something that aligns a little bit more closely with certainly not the completely overpowered, delivery rider bikes that we see. And that's something that will be a loophole that will be closed with these new standards, but something that a classification that brings it a bit closer to a practical reality for commercial uses, for the delivery cargo bikes that we see in places like London and Berlin and in the Netherlands and increasingly in the United States.
Yeah, so like I'm just looking at the petition you've got currently on change.org, and that's kind of like you're waiting a response from Tasmanian State Growth or the Department of State Growth. And I know a few people who are waiting on responses from State Growth. They've got a little bit on their mind at the moment. No, I won't touch that. And anyway, can this be done state by state, or is it a federal issue? If you're building a case here.
Well, we've got regulation from federal and state government, but I agree with Paul Griffith's sort of ideas around this, where we should probably be allowing councils to sandbox local micro-mobility rules and really test what's possible at the local level. You know, our cities and our towns have different conditions. Some of them are very hilly. When I was living in Hobart, it just really wasn't practical to go to, the top of some streets. You know, the Hobart's really at the bottom of a 1,000-metre high mountain. So it's just simply not practical to get around on a conventional electric bike if you live at the top of a hill. And that's the case for communities around Australia, maybe not so much most parts of Melbourne. So if we could at least test and trial those ideas and see if they work, then that's possibly where we have a pathway to a new classification.
Mm. And as we wait here, again, these are kind of in play at the moment, because in Victoria we're waiting on an announcement about e-bikes on public transport. New South Wales have already moved. They're kind of like, I think they're just a blanket ban, if anyone wants to correct me on that, of anything that's got aftermarket additions or alterations.
Yeah, absolutely. But what I see is that's mostly about the battery.
Yeah.
And it's really, that requires, and there's advocates for this in the space of battery passports, such that they have a QR code on them. All consumer batteries could be tracked, monitored as to what their chemistries are, how to recycle them. Not to get too technical here, but the requirements of the battery management system so that they're not overheating, they're not getting to that point where anything's catching on fire. That's really the issue here. It's not the e-bike or the aftermarket, modified electric bike. It's really the battery, which requires a global standard, and there's a big push for that. Globally, but that takes time.
You could do several shows on batteries. It's basically having your battery not in a too active state, and also having it of a good quality. You don't want it at zero, and you don't want it pushing over 90 in terms of the activity of that battery, or placing it under stress. And there's a lot of the manufacturers have got to, at a certain end of the production, that's fine. At the lower end, we don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and if you're buying a quality electric bike from a store, they'll have those standards in there. They'll have all of those requirements of the top tier battery standards from around the world. Yeah, certainly if you're buying a battery online off eBay or Amazon, you can never be 100% sure of its quality. There needs to be a global system, but at that kind of at that level, it takes many years to do. But there are programs around that coming into effect, but mostly at specific types of batteries, not right down to your electric toothbrush or your phone.
Well, we have ongoing issues. You know, not saying it's, you know, the issue in Victoria, but it's things in terms of, you know, people throwing out batteries and setting garbage trucks on fire, and the, you know, runaway e-bike fires that really capture the imagination. In terms of percentage, yes, they are a current issue, but they are not, you know, it's, I can understand in terms of, you know, things like Fire Rescue Victoria and the New South Wales equivalent really having concerns, but we've really must legislate and ensure that we have proper standards so we do not have these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all needs to be, we all need to be working together on that. We can't have a situation where states are going it one by one for something like battery safety. Yeah, it needs to be as a whole. Mm. And certainly on the other point about e-bike regulation, New South Wales introduced 500 watts as their power limit, and that wasn't really in consultation with the e-bike retailers or the industry as a whole, and a lot of people disagreed with that move.
That's an interesting thing to point there. I've got to go read up on that. So just in the very quickly, just towards the end here, because we're just running out of time a bit, just a little bit about yourself and what interests you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I started cycling every day when I was 18, 12 years ago, cycling to university, mostly for a sort of time and cost benefits. I was sick of missing a tram by a few seconds and having to wait 20 minutes for the next one. And obviously saving $10 a day is good beer money for an 18-year-old.
Yep.
And then, but hadn't really engaged in the advocacy aspect or really thought too much about cycling every day, other than this feels a bit unsafe. But it wasn't until the sort of pandemic that, you know, sort of increasing my screen time and suddenly getting sort of Dutch Cycling Embassy and Melissa and Chris Buntlett post through that I went, oh, actually, it's quite a sensible approach to urban design and looks quite lovely to be able to not just move through your community but enjoy it as a place and a space for not just machines but humans. Sound all very sensible. And then in the last 2 years, I've been attending Critical Mass, watching the sort of growth of our interests, and then I joined Moonee Valley Sustainability's Active Transport Group in the last year or so, and that's been really good with a sort of a good collection of people with some mixed backgrounds of different expertise, and that's been fantastic to start advocating for better links around Moonee Valley. Currently, we're advocating council to explore an east-west route, river to creek, from the Maribyrnong River to the Moonee Ponds Creek and beyond, hopefully to Mary Creek as well, through the link through Marybeth, but also improvements to the kind of shimmy, I guess, through along the train line, Craigieburn train line, that also takes D-line services as well. That would be a very handy route that goes through sort of the heart of Moonee Valley.
Great. Well, thank you for your time today. And I'll put some additional links into the podcast about some of that information we're speaking about.
Good to talk to you, Chris.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening in today. Just a quick bit of news at the end there. We've got a petition out at the moment for Richmond to adopt safe streets for Richmond for 30k per hour. And as cyclists and pedestrians, we experience daily the dread of speeding cars hitting us, and we've heard dozens of stories about being injured or worse. Now, there's a petition out on change.org. Now, this is really interesting, given in that earlier last week, Derebin Council adopted 30K as part of their High Street Preston streetscape upgrade. So, I'll put all that into the podcast description. And, yeah, keep an eye out on the Veloway and Gipps Street to see if there's... if they're going to catch the, you know, we're going to have an extension of, you know, Happy Munnell Day, where we have Happy Veloway Day and Gipps Street after almost 25 years. Good Lord. Anyway, thank you so much. Up next, there's something playing. I think it's Democracy Now! Or Accent of Women. And I'll be back in about a fortnight. The podcast should be up shortly, either on demand, the community radio app, 3cr.org.au, or our mirror site, or iTunes, a whole bunch of ways you can listen to Yarra Bogwood Users Group Radio.
Yarra Bogwood would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarra Bug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.